Chapter 10, Energetically Driven Evolution. The Great Pyramid appears to be one of many ways that our ancient ancestors gave us a prophecy of a coming golden age, which reaches a key turning point in and around the year 2012. The pyramid structure itself appears to be part of the message. When Russian scientists built pyramids out of PVC pipe and fiberglass with no metal, they found a variety of remarkable effects. The scope of these discoveries is stunning, and it forces us to completely re-examine everything we think we know about science and physics. Cancer, rather than being some mysterious and awful problem, can now be traced back to a loss of coherence in the light we store in our bodies, as all carcinogens end up scrambling light at a 380 nanometer frequency. Within the pyramid, cancer-causing chemicals quickly become non-toxic, as if their molecular structure were rearranged in a way that supports life, rather than damaging it. Similarly, any geological and meteorological problems that threaten human life are remarkably reduced simply by building pyramids. Once we begin looking for pyramid power type effects on a scientific level within biological systems, we find fantastic new discoveries. This includes the fact that we do appear to have the power to heal others with nothing more than our own thoughts, perhaps by visiting them directly with our energetic duplicate body and releasing photons containing healing codes, and ancient cultures were apparently well aware of this. We also found out that the DNA molecule leaves behind a phantom that absorbs light from its environment, almost like a miniature black hole, and holds it in place for up to 30 days, even once the molecule itself is taken away. This raises a very important question. Which came first, the DNA or the phantom? Is it possible that the phantom actually comes first? Gadeaev already proved that the DNA phantom can absorb photons of light and hold them in place. Could the DNA phantom be strong enough to do the same thing with atoms and molecules? We do have some interesting clues. In 2008, Dr. Sergei Lykin put various types of DNA in ordinary salt water, with no proteins or material that could help them communicate with each other. Each type of DNA was tagged with a different fluorescent compound. Surprisingly, the DNA molecules that were identical to each other were then mysteriously drawn together, displaying a telepathy-like quality. Specifically, matching DNA molecules were roughly twice as likely to gather together than molecules with different genetic sequences. Lykin believes this is merely caused by electrical charges, but the important point is that it works. Further experiments may well prove that the source field is doing this and assembles DNA out of tiny atoms and molecules that have not yet formed even basic amino acids. In 2007, a team of scientists from Russia, Germany, and Australia, led by Dr. V.N. Tsidovich, discovered that ordinary dust arranged into DNA-like structures when suspended in a plasma of charged particles, similar to the conditions we find in outer space. A computer model was built to reproduce this environment, and no order or structure was expected. But the dust naturally formed into corkscrew-shaped helical structures. These DNA-like structures were attracted to each other. They would divide and form two equal copies of the original, similar to the process of reproduction. They would change the structure of their neighbors simply by being nearby them. They also evolved into increasingly complex structures as the simulation continued. According to Tsidovich, these complex, self-organized plasma structures exhibit all the necessary properties to qualify them as candidates for inorganic living matter. They are autonomous, they reproduce, and they evolve. Furthermore, in 2006, UCLA professor of astronomy Dr. Mark Morris announced the stunning discovery of a DNA-shaped double helix nebula near the center of our galaxy. we see two intertwining strands wrapped around each other, as in a DNA molecule. Nobody has ever seen anything like that before in the cosmic realm. What we see indicates a high degree of order. Just as this book was in final edits in January 2011, a Nobel Prize-winning biologist announced that he had transferred a piece of bacterial DNA into a sealed test tube with nothing more than water inside. The water in the test tube rearranged into an exact duplicate of the DNA, which was floating in another sealed test tube next to it. In order for this to work, the original DNA sample needed to be greatly diluted, and a weak electromagnetic field of 7 Hz had to be applied. After 18 hours, some of the water molecules in the sealed tube transformed into perfect DNA molecules. John Dunn wrote about the implications of Dr. Luc Montagnier's discovery in techworld.com. What does all of this mean? It could be that the propagation of life is able to make use of the quantum nature of reality to project itself in subtle ways, as has been hinted at in previous experiments. Alternatively, it could be that life itself is a complex projection of these quantum phenomena and utterly depends on them in ways not yet understood because they are incredibly hard to detect. Water might be a good medium in which DNA can copy itself using processes that hint at quantum entanglement and teleportation, our term. DNA may well be created by a quantum template that we can't even see or measure directly, but exists as a structure in the source field and is written into the basic laws that govern matter and energy. Could this energetic structure gather photons, atoms, and molecules together to spiral life as we know it into existence? The answers may very well be staring us in the face, as Montagnier just discovered, but most scientists do not want to go there. Ever since the Reformation, there has been an unspoken deal between scientists and the church. You deal with the spirit and we'll deal with the facts, which of course is that life is an accident and there is no higher purpose or intelligence to the universe. Nonetheless, this is as much of a blind religious belief as anything else. I personally believe in evidence. So let's see what we can find. The evolution of life on Earth. No matter where we look on Earth, we find bacteria. As reported in Scientific American, a wide variety of microorganisms were found in core samples taken from 500 meters below the Savannah River. Even at core samples from 1.7 miles below the Earth's surface, 2.8 kilometers, living bacteria are still being found. In normal topsoil, you can find over 1 billion bacteria in a single gram of dirt. But even in rock samples from 400 meters down into the Earth's crust, you can find anywhere between 100 and 10 million bacteria. Over 9,000 different types of microorganisms have been found in these subsurface areas, and some of them were found in temperatures as high as 167 degrees Fahrenheit. 75 degrees Celsius. You may also think that Darwinian evolution is scientific, but consider this. Once you've got microbes, the vast majority of all the magic that needs to happen in order to create life has already taken place. You have DNA, protein synthesis, respiration, movement, awareness, as well as all the magical photon-capturing properties we've been exploring here. Our Earth is only 4 billion years old, and it very likely started out as a molten rock. Things didn't cool down enough for oceans to form until 3.8 billion years ago. But even at this time, rock samples have been found that contain all the basic isotopes plants create from photosynthesis. Even better, a primitive yeast-like organism has also been found in 3.8 billion-year-old rocks. That means that as soon as the Earth had water, life essentially appeared instantaneously. Once we reach 3.5 billion years ago, we find many more fossilized microbes and rocks that were not melted by volcanic activity. According to Dr. John Joe McFadden, the world is just not big enough to evolve life if it relied entirely on chance. These fossil microbes look like organisms alive today and are likely to have been just as complex. Life may be improbable, but it was quick. Just to prove how ridiculous the odds really are, an MIT biologist calculated how likely it is that even one protein with 100 amino acids could form by random mutation. And it came out to one chance out of a number with 65 zeros. A 2008 article in Wired magazine revealed new discoveries that bacteria can live in the Earth's most inhospitable areas, including the smoldering heat inside volcanoes and nuclear reactors, and the freezing cold temperatures deep within the Antarctic ice. In fact, Antarctic bacteria were able to be thawed out and brought back to life after 10 million years. The article also says that microbes can survive the shock of being launched into space, and amino acids, the precursors to all biological life, have been found in the dust from Comet 81P Wild 2. Another recent study from the Imperial College of London found uracil and xanthine, the precursors to DNA, in fragments from a meteorite that crashed in Australia in 1969. In January 2011, the Geological Society of America announced that living bacteria were found floating in fluid that was trapped inside salt crystals for 34,000 years. They were shrunken and small and appeared to be in a hibernation-type state. It took them about 2.5 months to wake up and begin reproducing normally. "We're not sure what's going on," Professor Tim Lowenstein said. "They need to be able to repair DNA because DNA degrades with time." An even more stunning discovery was made by British astronomers Sir Fred Hoyle and Dr. Nalin Chandra Wickramasinghe, who explored the composition of galactic dust in the 1960s. More and more, the evidence suggested that the vast majority of dust throughout the entire galaxy, some 99.9%, is actually freeze-dried bacteria. This discovery began when Hoyle and Wickramasinghe studied the infrared light from the dust in our galaxy and concluded that these dust grains had to be 70% hollow on the inside. Bacteria have a hard outer cell wall and a softer interior. They were stunned when they found out that freeze-dried bacteria are also 70% hollow on the inside. By simply assuming that galactic dust grains were freeze-dried bacteria, they found a perfect fit to their observations. This led them to an utterly stunning conclusion. Interstellar grains must surely be bacteria, albeit freeze-dried, perhaps mostly dead. At the very least, this was a hypothesis that had to be explored. In a lecture from April 15, 1980, Hoyle spelled it all out. Microbiology may be said to have had its beginnings in the 1940s. A new world of the most astonishing complexity began then to be revealed. In retrospect, I find it remarkable that microbiologists did not at once recognized that the world into which they had penetrated had of necessity to be of a cosmic order. I suspect that the cosmic quality of microbiology will seem as obvious to future generations as the sun being the center of our solar system seems obvious to the present generation. Some 30 years later, as I write this book, that predicted change in scientific thought has obviously still not arrived. Most scientists who even bother to write about interstellar bacteria still try to stick with the comfortable idea that they evolved by Darwinian mutation, freeze-dried in space, and then crashed to Earth where they then seeded all life. It's a much greater step to realize that bacteria are everywhere because that's what the universe does. create life. If this is true, then how could we possibly have missed such a stunning discovery in the history of science? In his noteworthy book, Sparks of Life, Harvard professor James Strick revealed that there was an extensive conspiracy in the 1800s to suppress any scientific discoveries of microbes that appeared spontaneously from non-living material rather than through allegedly random Darwinian mutation. Dr. Strick clarified his position at a 2003 conference held by the Wilhelm Reich Institute, and it was written up and published online by Jack Flannel. In the 1800s, the French Academy of Sciences offered prize money to any scientist who could conclusively prove that life was either spontaneous or random. And Louis Pasteur won the contest. When you see a carton of milk that says it is pasteurized, this means it was cooked to kill all the bacteria, and this process was named after Louis Pasteur. The problem is that Pasteur's competitors did get life forms to grow out of non-living environments, such as by using preparations of hay that had been totally sterilized in water. Pasteur simply refused to repeat these experiments. It's even more disappointing that Pasteur found life that spontaneously appeared in a small percentage of his own experiments, but he never even wrote about them because he felt they had to be mistakes and were not worth mentioning. The biogenesis side of the debate had evidence to support its conclusions going all the way back to 1837 with the little-known work of Andrew Cross. At the time, electricity was a new and exciting phenomenon. Cross wanted to try to grow crystals artificially by zapping chemicals with a weak electrical current. Specifically, he mixed up a silicate of potash and hydrochloric acid and then dropped a fist-sized chunk of iron oxide rock into it. He then zapped the acid bath with a small battery and hoped to find artificial silica crystals growing on the rock. Instead, he got something much, much weirder. After 14 days, whitish specks started forming in the center of the electrified stone. 4 days later, each speck was twice as large and had 6 or 8 tiny strands growing out from it. Each strand was longer than the speck itself. Cross reported what happened next in a paper he wrote for the London Electrical Society in 1837. On the 26th day of the experiment, the objects assumed the form of perfect insects, standing erect on the bristles which they were growing. Although I regarded this as most unusual, I attached no singular significance to it until 2 days later, the 28th day of the experiment, when the magnifying lens showed that these things were moving their legs. I must say now that I was quite astonished. After a few more days, they detached themselves from the stone and moved about through the caustic acid solution. In the course of a few weeks, more than 100 of them made their appearance on the oxide of iron. The creatures appear to be similar to the genus Acari, which is a form of mite. Under a microscope, I examined them and found that the smaller ones had 6 legs, the larger ones had 8. Others who have examined them pronounce them to be of the genus Acari, but some say they are an entirely new species. Cross knew he would be attacked by his colleagues, so he carefully repeated the experiment by sterilizing all the ingredients with heat in a closed container before he ever started it, but the little critters still appeared the same way. Other scientists repeated Cross's experiment and got the same results. But according to the 1959 article by Frank Edwards that we pulled the above quotes from, they were too afraid to speak out about it. This finally changed when the legendary Michael Faraday reported to the Royal Institution that he too had gotten these small creatures to grow under the same conditions. He was not sure whether they were actually created spontaneously in the sterile solutions or brought back to life by the electricity. But either result is a total challenge to mainstream science and biology as we now know it. Another early pioneer we briefly mentioned in Chapter 1 is Wilhelm Reich. His research into orgone energy, as he called it, was dismissed as a joke. Nonetheless, given everything we've been uncovering in this investigation, he appears to have been on the right track. Reich concluded that orgone fills all space in the universe, does not have mass, penetrates matter, has a pulsating movement that can be measured, has a strong attraction to water, and is accumulated naturally in organisms by eating, breathing, and taking it in through the skin. So far, this all sounds very familiar. Reich created accumulators that concentrated this orgone energy and found they remarkably increased the speed that wounds and burns would heal in laboratory mice. These treatments also decreased shock. Seeds grew into substantially larger and healthier plants when zapped by Reich's orgone accumulator. Reich also found evidence of spontaneous generation in sterile environments. He saw what he felt to be bluish points of light under the microscope, which appeared before the life forms themselves were created, and he called these bursts of light bions. This theory was widely ridiculed and is still attacked by skeptics on the internet today, criticizing Reich's protocols as scientifically unsound. Nonetheless, Professor Ignacio Pacheco successfully replicated Reich's results in 2000, and the photographs of what grew in his test tube are quite stunning. Pacheco heated ordinary sand from a non-polluted beach to white-hot levels, namely 1400 degrees Celsius. This destroys all known forms of biological life other than the extremophile bacteria we spoke about earlier that appear in volcanoes and nuclear reactors. The sand was then cooled off in a sterile environment, poured into a sterile test tube with distilled water in it, and capped off. Each tube was then sterilized in an autoclave 2 times in a row, with 24 hours between each sterilization. This process is used to destroy all known spores and vegetative cells. Pacheco then studied the particles floating at the top of the water under a microscope after each 24-hour period following sterilization, and that's where the magic happened. Amazingly, a variety of different structures appeared in the water that looked like complex living organisms capable of growth and division. They were actively moving around in the solution, and Pacheco videotaped the results. Although Pacheco has not yet identified whether these structures have DNA in them, he feels these bions can be considered living structures in almost every sense. Some of them look like simple microorganisms, but others were much more complex. This included microscopic sea vegetables, similar to Gorgonia. Some of Pacheco's most compelling photographs are of single leaves that broke off from these plants when they were put on the microscopic slide. He also found soft-looking blobs, which then started to grow a bright white spiraling shell of calcium around themselves, showing what appears to be the formation of an ordinary ocean shellfish at a very tiny level. The beginning spiral of the outer shell can be clearly seen, and it matches what we would expect to see perfectly, even though the soft inner body is still partially exposed. My favorite photograph is of what looks like a critter with an obvious head and a roughly spherical body that is covered with spikes for self-defense. Pacheco believes these are transitional forms from the inorganic stage of organization to the organic and living condition of evolution. Interestingly, if he did not sterilize the beach sand first, none of these little things would grow. It seems that the purity of the molecules was a very important element that allowed life to form. When we look at these little guys, the obvious question is this: where did their DNA come from? The same question needs to be asked for all the bacteria we find in the most inhospitable places on Earth, and indeed throughout all the dust in the galaxy. Pasteur may have made off with the prize money in the 1800s to support Darwin's model of evolution, but in the process we've been robbed of a much greater truth, that life is indeed a product of intelligent design. You don't have to be a Bible thumper to see that. All you need is rational thinking in the face of all the evidence.